And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show podcast wherever you get your shows. Just search for it, whether that be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you get your shows. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. We do start with breaking news this morning unfolding overnight. Pope Francis of the Catholic Church has died at 88 years old. This comes after a nearly five-week battle in the hospital earlier this year, as he struggled with some serious health issues, double pneumonia. He had part of his lung removed when he was much younger, was struggling, made it out of the hospital a couple of weeks ago, addressed a Sunday Mass yesterday in Vatican City, and has passed away. It happened just a couple of hours ago, I think around the 4:30-ish a.m. hour here on the East Coast, as Pope Francis, 88 years old, he was the Pope for 12 years, has passed away. We've got a lot of coverage and reaction this morning coming up from that. We do have a live look at Vatican City this well as this morning, as individuals are making their way around that area, and some very big questions going forward for the Catholic Church to make, as Pope Francis, as he was arguably, and I don't think there's much argument, but arguably the most progressive pope that the Catholic Church has ever had. There will be a very interesting process that unfolds in the coming days and weeks to select the next leader of the Catholic Church. And the big question for Catholics this morning is, does the church continue down this road, or does it get back to more traditional teachings? That is really the big question. Caroline Levitt, the White House press secretary, is slated to join Fox News coming up here live this morning, waiting for that to take place. And we'll dip into that coverage as we're watching everything unfold. Fox had a really good package about the history of the Pope, kind of going through some of the things that he did. I caught that earlier this morning. Let's see if we can roll that package. I thought it was a very interesting insight into Pope Francis and everything that he has done in his 12 years as the Pope. Let's roll that.
When the white smoke filled the air over the Vatican in March of 2013, it signaled Pope Francis had been elected to lead the Catholic Church. And almost from that moment, he signaled changes were coming. The first pontiff from Latin America, the first Jesuit, the first to call himself Francis, would be just a few of the new beginnings. Born Jorge Bergoglio in Buenos Aires on December 17, 1936, to Italian immigrant parents, he was the oldest of five. The future Pope's father, Mario, worked for the railway, and his mother, Regina Savori, stayed at home. As a student, he had a variety of jobs, including working as a bouncer in a bar. In 1958, Bergoglio entered the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits. He graduated with a degree in philosophy from the College of San Jose and San Miguel, and later taught literature and psychology. He was ordained a priest in 1969. In 1992, Pope John Paul II appointed him a bishop. 6 years later, he became Archbishop of Buenos Aires, a culturally diverse and economically challenged community. 3 years later, he was elevated to cardinal, where he was known for taking public transportation instead of a private car. When Pope John Paul II died in 2005, he was among the cardinals who elected the German Joseph Ratzinger, who became Benedict XVI. 8 years later, the unthinkable. Benedict became the first pope in nearly 600 years to resign, sending shockwaves throughout not just Catholicism, but all around the world. For Benedict's successor, the cardinals chose the 76-year-old Bergoglio. It was a surprise to most, but not his fellow cardinals.
We spoke about him often because he was widely known and respected.
Always setting the example of his own philosophy that servants of the church should be humble and lead simpler lives. He paid his own bill at the hotel where he stayed during the conclave and turned down the palatial papal quarters in favor of a more modest residence at the Vatican. He also began speaking frankly about modern issues, famously saying, "Who am I to judge?" when asked about the sexual orientation of priests. During Holy Week ceremonies, he shocked traditionalists by washing the feet of women and non-Catholics. For his first international trip, the Holy Father traveled to his native continent, South America, visiting Brazil, the world's most Catholic country, for World Youth Day. Celebrating Mass before 3 million people on Rio de Janeiro's famed Copacabana Beach. Passionate about the environment, his signature encyclical Laudato Si outlined how global warming hurts the less fortunate around the world. He took a pilgrimage to North America, first stopping in Cuba, saying Mass to thousands.
At the home of the brave.
Then on to the United States, addressing a joint session of Congress and visiting with President Barack Obama at the White House. In New York, he spoke before the United Nations General Assembly and held Mass at Madison Square Garden.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
In the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, he attended the World Meeting of the Families Festival and met privately with victims of sex abuse. Francis also defended Islam while condemning the terror group ISIS. In the wake of the deadly terror attacks on Christmas in Egypt, Francis traveled to Cairo, extending the hand of fellowship to Muslims. Francis also became the first pope to visit Iraq on March 5, 2021. On his trip, he met with Iraq's top Ayatollah and urged peace. At the age of 84, his health started to decline, first undergoing surgery to remove part of his colon for what the Vatican described as a planned procedure, and later suffering from a small fracture in his knee. During a trip to Canada, the Pope required the help of a wheelchair and walker, telling reporters he could no longer travel like he used to and may possibly retire one day. In late 2022, his predecessor, Pope Benedict, died, marking the end of an unprecedented 9-year-long arrangement of two popes living side by side in the Vatican Gardens. Pope Francis presided over Benedict's funeral and said losing Benedict felt like he had lost a dad. Francis continued to battle opposition as he worked to make the Catholic Church more inclusive. He said he welcomed the criticism because it meant there was freedom to speak. His priestly motto had always been a Latin phrase that recognizes God's mercy and sovereignty, a sentiment that guided his ministry and will now be his legacy. In New York, Lauren Green, Fox News.
A really good package there by Fox, kind of walking through what was a very interesting 12 years for Pope Francis. If you're just joining us this morning, the Pope has passed away at the age of 88 years old. That will set forth a very interesting process known as the conclave that will likely start in probably, if I had to guess, maybe about a week or so. This is all, of course, unfolding and happening now. We don't know when the funeral and all of that is set to be taking place. I would presume in the next couple of days, maybe by the end of the week, as you're looking live at Vatican City this morning, as you're joining us on video on YouTube, Rumble, and X. A very interesting time for the Catholic Church, and as you heard in the Fox package, you know, it's been an interesting couple of almost an interesting decade or so for the Catholic Church. As Pope Francis has welcomed in or has attempted to welcome in individuals that and kind of welcome in ideas that have not been standard within Catholicism. And that's been very interesting. It's something that has, to many conservative Catholics, of which I would very much put myself in that camp, has been incredibly frustrating. Right, and it's kind of interesting. You go back and you look at, you know, the history of the Pope itself, the position. You go back to what, the 8th century, I guess, when the Pope was first recognized in the Catholic Church. Originally, it was a very political figure, right? That's kind of what that position took, and what was very common of that position. But as world geopolitics have adapted through the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st century, that obviously has changed very dramatically. Now you've got, you know, major world leaders in all of these countries that are making very important political decisions. The Pope has taken a little bit of a back seat to that, at least in the past. Now you look at the way in which Pope Francis operated as the head of the Catholic Church, very much inserting himself in these very controversial political decisions. right? You're talking about things like climate change. And we constantly heard from the Pope about him railing on capitalism, for example, very much a socialist ideology coming from the leader of the Catholic Church. And that very much alienated a lot of more conservative individuals within the Catholic Church. And I think it's important to note, when you talk about individuals that are conservative, of course, the connotation, especially as it relates to American politics, is, you know, conservative, Trump, Republican. But when you look at what it is to be an actual conservative, to conserve, to be conservative yourself, right? That doesn't inherently mean that you are associated or affiliated with a right-leaning or a left-leaning party. You look at individuals that overall are very conservative themselves. Pope Francis was not very sympathetic to those causes. I mean, when you've got a Pope railing on capitalism and promoting socialist ideas and socialist ideologies himself, I mean, fully proclaiming these ideas, that creates a very interesting dichotomy within the Catholic Church. I mean, you heard some of the commentary on the Fox package about some of the things that he was involved in, some of the ideals that he pushed forward, which were very controversial for a lot of Catholics. And so the big question the church is going to have to really ask themselves, and the cardinals, the College of Cardinals that are going to be set up to determine who the next pope will be, it's going to be interesting to see if they continue down this track. Do they bring forward another individual who has some of these same ideas? Do they bring forward somebody else who proclaims some of these same ideas, some of these same ideologies in the Catholic Church? Or does the Catholic Church go back to focusing on more biblical teachings? Does the church divorce itself from some of the controversial political discussions that go on, things like climate change, right? Things like gay marriage, same-sex rights, these things that traditionally the Catholic Church has not touched? Now, some argue on the other side, and there's been arguments made that, well, the Catholic Church needs to broaden itself, needs to open itself up to individuals of different ideologies. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to that, but it has not come without an incredible amount of controversy as it relates to Pope Francis and to many Catholics across the world. What, 2 billion Catholics across the world? So there's very much going to be a lot of questions that are going to need to be asked in the coming days and weeks. And I'll just take you to yesterday, as Pope Francis was put in a wheelchair and wheeled out in one of the balconies at the Vatican during the Easter service. Obviously, the Holy Week taking place today, Easter Monday. This was the Pope just yesterday, seemingly hours before his death, as this took place in Vatican City. Take a listen and watch to this.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buona Pasqua. Il maestro delle cerimonie di leggere il messaggio.
Preso su di sé tutto il male del mondo.
This was all just yesterday, waking up and hearing the news this morning that the Pope has passed away at the age of 88 years old. Rather shocking, as you could hear in his voice and you could see in the video for those watching on the video version. He appeared to be, of course, very frail. He had spent almost 5 weeks in the hospital earlier this year, battling his life. Multiple times it appeared that he was not going to survive what was double pneumonia. At one part, he was able to rally, was released from the hospital back just a couple of weeks ago, was told to isolate himself. He did not heed that advice, did not heed that warning from medical professionals within inside Vatican City. Vice President J.D. Vance posting this, who just met with the Pope yesterday, saying, quote, "I just learned of the passing of Pope Francis. My heart goes out to the millions of Christians all over the world who loved him. I was happy to see him yesterday, though he was obviously very ill. But I'll always remember him for the below homily he gave in the very early days of COVID. It was really quite beautiful. May God rest his soul." The White House also commenting on this early this morning as well, posting a picture of J.D. Vance meeting with Pope Francis yesterday, shaking his hand. Another photo of President Donald Trump, First Lady Melania Trump meeting with Pope Francis. I'm not exactly sure what year or when exactly this picture took place. I don't know if that was maybe during his 2015 visit. I'm not exactly sure when that took place, but you could see the president depicted there with the J.D. Vance and the First Lady. So obviously reaction continuing to come in this morning as this big breaking news has happened, and just kind of going through some of the other details that we are tracking this morning. I've got this was the announcement as it was made in Vatican City about, I guess this would be about 2 or 2.5 or so hours ago. This was the reaction and the announcement of Pope Francis's passing.
Carissimi fratelli e sorelle.
Dear brothers and sisters, with deep sorrow, I must announce the death of our Holy Father Francis. At 7:35 this morning, the Bishop of Rome, Francis, returned to the house of the Father. His entire life was dedicated to the service of the Lord and his Church. He taught us to live the values of the gospel with fidelity, courage, and universal love, especially toward the poorest and most marginalized. With immense gratitude for his example as a true disciple of the Lord Jesus, we commend the soul of Pope Francis to the infinite merciful love of the triune God.
And there was...
Carissimi fratelli e sorelle.
And so there's the reaction earlier this morning at 7:30 local time in Vatican City, where this took place, right around 4:30 a.m. on the East Coast when this announcement came out. So going to be a couple of interesting weeks as we watch this. So this is kind of how the process is going to go down. It's a rather interesting one. It's called the conclave. That's the Vatican's process for choosing a new pope. It hasn't happened in almost 13 years. So it's not something that happens, obviously, very often, but the next pope will be chosen by the College of the Cardinals, the Catholic Church's most senior figures, which have been appointed by the Pope himself, who will make their way to Rome over the next couple of days for the conclave. The name comes from the Latin conclave, meaning with key, indicating the closed process of electing a pope. There are more than 220 cardinals from more than 70 countries within the Catholic Church, but only about 120 cardinals are electors. Those over the age of 80 are excluded from the process in voting on a pope. Two-thirds of the cardinal electors have been chosen by Francis in the past 10 years and largely reflect his vision of a more inclusive church. So that's setting up the battle for really the battle within the Catholic Church of continuing with this message of, as it's described in many articles, as inclusivity, but as many Catholics find it to be very antithetical to many of the Catholic teachings. Once the cardinals are assembled in Rome, usually 15 to 20 days after the Pope's death, they gather under Michelangelo's magnificent painted ceiling in the Sistine Chapel and begin their deliberations. After the after everything is declared and all of the speeches, I believe every one of the cardinals has an opportunity. All 120 of them will have the opportunity to speak and give their thoughts, give their opinions on what the next who the next pope should be, what some of the ideals, the ideologies, the agenda for the next pope will be. Voting will begin, and it does need to be a two-thirds vote. The cardinals will swear an oath of absolute secrecy and are permitted no contact with the outside world for the duration of the election process. Their phones are removed. No newspapers, televisions, letters, or messages are allowed. The chapel is also swept for listening devices before and during the conclave, a very secretive process there. The cardinals sleep and eat in a purpose-built hostel, which is known as St. Martha's House, near the Sistine Chapel where Pope Francis has lived for the past 12 years. The conclave begins with a celebration of Mass, after which deliberations and voting begin. Votes are taken each day, morning and afternoon, until a candidate wins that two-thirds majority. There is a day's break for prayer and reflection after every 7 ballots. If there is no conclusion result after 30 ballots, a candidate will be elected by a simple majority. The longest a papal conclave in recent history was back in 1922 when the cardinals took 5 days to choose their new leader. Any baptized male can be elected as pope, although a serving cardinal is inevitably chosen. Each elector is given a ballot card with the words "Elego in Sunum," which is "I elect the pontiff," printed on top. They insert the name of their choice, fold the card, and drop it into a ballot box. The ballot is secret, but that does not mean that the process is immune from all of the lobbying. And you know, at the end of the day, it's an election. Right, we spend a lot of time talking about elections as it relates to American and world politics. This is not a completely divorced process. It's relatively similar to what we discuss in many discussions here on the show. After each round of voting, the ballot cards are burned. Chemicals are added to make the smoke black or white. Black smoke emerging from the 60-foot chimney indicates an inconclusive ballot. White smoke announces to the world that a new pope has been elected. The successful candidate winning that two-thirds majority is asked if he accepts the election, and if so, which name he chooses to take as pontiff. The cardinals pledge obedience to the new pope, who is led into the adjacent room of tears to be dressed in a white outfit with a skull cap and red slippers. 3 sets of vestments in different sizes will have been made by Vatican tailors in advance. The dean of the cardinals steps into the main balcony of St. Peter's Basilica, in front of which thousands of Catholic devotees and tourists will be gathered, and will declare that, quote, "I announce to you with great joy, we have a pope." So that is going to be the process that unfolds. Kind of reading this article from The Guardian this morning, seems like 15 to 20 days after the pope's death. So that will put us, you know, probably in the second week or so, second week of May, when this process will begin. And it'll be an interesting one to track and follow, as major decisions for the Catholic Church will be outstanding. As I was, you know, mentioning earlier, you know, some of the movements, some of the pushes that have been made by Pope Francis have not been popular within the Catholic Church, have many Catholics and many individuals more on the more conservative side of the political aisle find themselves very frustrated with some of the movement within the Catholic Church. And, you know, we are in an age of hyper-politicization, right? Everywhere, all over the place. You literally cannot escape it. It is in every facet of your life. It's in movies, it's in television shows, it's in video games, it's in every facet of life. And I don't for one second believe that some politicization is not going to take place as it relates to the picking of a new pope within the Catholic Church. I don't see any other way around it, especially with the College of Cardinals, many of these individuals, almost 70% of them, being chosen by Pope Francis, who very much had that, I would argue, a left-wing socialist political ideology, presumably surrounding himself with at least some like-minded people, might set kind of the stage and set the agenda for what this is going to look like going forward. So obviously, a lot of coverage, a lot of things that we are continuing to watch and track. If you're just joining us again this morning, Pope Francis, who has served the Catholic Church as Pope for the last 12 years, is dead at the age of 88 years old. A lot of reaction, a lot of very interesting process to watch over the next couple of weeks. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Turning our attention to some local news this morning, a scary situation unfolding in Surf City over the weekend, where a 14-year-old was shot in what Surf City police are calling an accidental shooting. Listen to this. According to a press release, it happened at the Southside Park around 6:30 on Saturday. Town officials say when police arrived on the scene, they performed life-saving measures on a 14-year-old child. That child transferred and rushed to Novant Health's New Hanover Regional Medical Center here in Wilmington. According to the Surf City Police Department, the child was awake and alert in the pediatric intensive care unit. Police say following the investigation, a 19-year-old by the name of Anthony Apolitio of Sneed's Ferry was identified as the suspect. He has been charged with the following: assault with a deadly weapon, inflicting serious injury, underage possession of alcohol, and underage consumption of alcohol. Neighbors in the area say they were shocked that something like this would happen. The 19-year-old is currently being held at the Pender County Detention Center under a secure bond of $25,000. Not exactly sure. You know, they say in the press release notes that it's an accidental shooting. How an accidental shooting takes place like that remains kind of unseen as it stands this morning. But it's something that we'll see if we get any additional details and any additional coverage of that and pass it along to you. A scary situation unfolding on Saturday. In some other local news this morning, the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, CFPUA, has filed a former objection to Chemours' motion to seal documents in a lawsuit involving water polluted by Gen X. Attorneys against Chemours and DuPont are objecting to Chemours' motion to seal CFPUA's summary judgment briefing and more than 180 of the company's documents submitted as evidence in the case, according to a press release from CFPUA. The documents requested to be sealed include a record of Chemours and DuPont's decades of releases of Gen X and other PFAS from their chemical manufacturing plant into the Cape Fear River. CFPUA's executive director Kenneth Waldrop said, quote, CFPUA has spent tens of millions of dollars to build and operate new granular activated carbon filters to remove their PFAS from the water we treat at the Sweeney Water Treatment Plant. I suppose it shouldn't be a surprise that now they want to keep our community from seeing the detailed records of what they did and what they failed to do in the course of their PFAS pollution. We, however, firmly believe that our customers and our community deserve to know. We covered this on the show back just a couple of weeks ago. We did a full show on Gen X, a full show on Chemours, and this notion, this idea that that Chemours was attempting to hide some of this information, which is no surprise, right? This is the company that calls themselves a great neighbor, a good friend, so on and so forth, only to find out years and you know, decades later that this company was in fact responsible for polluting the Cape Fear River Basin. That this company was in fact responsible for dumping dangerous, harmful chemicals that it appears obvious they knew into the Cape Fear River. they decided to do that. They did it for the better part of 40 years before anybody really knew exactly what was going on outside of Chemours, outside of DuPont at the time. It's a very interesting story. We covered this on the show back just a couple of weeks ago. You can go back and search for that coverage. Search for the Gen X coverage over on the Nick Craig Show on YouTube or Rumble and find that show. Would encourage you to kind of go through that process and read through or listen to rather some of the coverage there, because what you've got going on now is a company that absolutely is responsible for what they did, a company that chose to pollute the water, a company that chose to hide that away from government regulators, hide that away from individuals at various water utilities like CFPUA, like H2GO, like the Pender Municipal Water System, hid it all away. And then all of a sudden, you know, years later, 40 years later, they said, actually, maybe this stuff is no good. Maybe this is a big problem. Maybe this is something that we should take a look at. They've been in court. You and I, the ratepayers in New Hanover County, individuals in Brunswick County and Pender County, you and I have had to burden, at this point, tens of millions of dollars worth of investment, tens of millions of dollars worth of investment into various water systems, into various filtration systems, whether it be low pressure reverse osmosis like exists over in the H2GO system, whether that be granular activated carbon or other sort of RO plants under CFPUA. We have had to burden that cost. We have had to bear that responsibility while Chemours, which was DuPont, they spun it off into Chemours knowing damn well what was going to happen, spun off Chemours and decided that they were going to, at this point, pay nothing, run incessant television and social media commercials talking about how great of a neighbor they are, right? They're a great neighbor, this, great neighbor that, yet they've done nothing to actually be a good neighbor, right? Your water bill is more expensive. Your utility bills are now more expensive because of those details, because of the lack of information, because of their unwillingness to handle this situation for the better part of 40 years. So this battle is going to continue big time. This has been a lengthy legal battle. It's been over 5 years now that this has gone on. This battle will continue, and it's going to be very interesting eventually what happens, right? Because there will be a big settlement. There will be a large sum of money that ends up being transitioned from DuPont / Chemours to various water utilities like CFPUA. But for ratepayers, right, the damage is already done, right? Because we've already paid the expensive utility bills to get this dealt with, right? The CFPUA is a public utility, doesn't really have the authority, really doesn't have the ability to wait for a legal challenge or a legal battle to come to fruition before they decide to do something, right? They have an obligation to go forward and push clean water, right? They have a obligation to their ratepayers to provide clean utility services. So they've invested into GAC. They've invested into reverse osmosis and a whole bunch of other sorts of filtration technologies. Do we get our money back? I mean, that's always been the big question. As CFPUA is a ratepayer-funded utility, do we get our money back when this is all said and done? But if there's a multi-billion dollar lawsuit, who knows what the final total is going to be, hundreds of millions of dollars against DuPont CFPUA, do we get a cut of that back? Somebody going to write us a check for all of the money that we have invested as ratepayers into that system? It's a very interesting kind of process to watch unfold. So it's something that we'll keep an eye on here, and the legal challenges and legal battles likely to continue. Going back to our coverage this morning of Pope Francis, Cardinal Dolan in New York City is speaking live this morning on Fox News. Let's cut into this coverage and see what he's got to say. This is happening live right now.
Eternal soul, you bet we do. He'd want us to. He was such an eloquent preacher of divine mercy. But we also offer gratitude to God for the gift. The gift that he was. We don't call him Holy Father for nothing. He's the father of our family. and there's a death in the family, and we're saddened. We use a Latin phrase these days, starting about 5 hours ago, sede vacante. The chair is empty. The empty chair, the chair of Peter, is empty. Sede vacante, all right? That's the chair he sat in when he visited New York. That's his portrait, obviously. That's the cross he carried. The chalice that he gave me, remember, at Madison Square Garden? That's the chalice he gave me. So we have vivid, grateful memories of him. And I'm just so happy that you all are here. We can never choreograph our own birth or death, can we? That's always in God's hands. But if you could choreograph it, you couldn't choreograph it any better than what happened. The last time we saw him, Easter Sunday, the last words of Blessed Easter, as he gave us his blessing. The day that we believe Jesus rose from the dead and shares that victory with us, in which we trust by divine mercy, Pope Francis now shares in abundance. You couldn't have choreographed it better. And we thank him for that. The way he lived and the way he died, he was a great teacher, which the Pope is always called to be. Thank you again for being here. Stick with me in the coming days if I can be of any service to you, because I just appreciate you and the possibility of speaking to the wider community. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Joe, what do we do now?
Question or two?
Juliet?
Yes.
Hi, Juliet. How you been?
I'm okay.
Happy Easter. Happy Passover. Happy Easter.
If you could talk about his stewardship and what he meant to Catholics and what he brought to the papacy.
I love that word, stewardship.
Oh, there's Fox's coverage, Cardinal Dolan in New York City speaking on the passing of the Pope. Obviously, a lot of interesting things set to unfold in the coming days and weeks. We'll keep an eye on it right here. Well, that's going to do it for a shorter Monday edition. Hopefully, you enjoyed your Easter weekend of the Nick Craig Show. We've got a busy week coming up. Budgets are taking place across the state of North Carolina, Wilmington, New Hanover County. We'll dive into some of those budget conversations this week with some of our local elected officials. Hopefully, you'll stay tuned for that. Don't forget that you can support the show over on patreon.com/Nick Craig. Thanks for joining us live this Monday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.